Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Peace breaks out when police force quits. We've got that story plus suing the CIA. But first on this mostly good news edition of New World Next Week, Nebraska abolishes civil forfeiture. Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts, a Republican, has signed a major state forfeiture bill into law. Like New Mexico before it, the Cornhusker state now requires a criminal conviction before property can be forfeited. Civil forfeiture is the law enforcement tool which allows property suspected of being involved in or derived from criminal activity to be seized by the police, sheriffs, or federal agents. It was ramped up in the 80s as a means of combating the drug trade and organized crime with the goal of stripping kingpins of their assets and ill-gotten gains. 30 years later, though, forfeiture morphed into a system that's far more used to seize small amounts of cash that stacks the decks against property owners fighting to get it back, and that encourages profiteering by law enforcement authorities. Now that the Nebraska bill has been signed into law, innocent property owners will have some rather significant new protections, the most significant of which is the requirement for a criminal conviction. Now, James, we actually just talked about this issue exactly a few weeks ago. When the cops steal your stuff, they call it equitable sharing. Is it possible now that this is in the zeitgeist and we're going to see more places make the move to try and curtail this?
I think there has been a lot more attention on this issue lately, and you cannot look at this issue without being outraged unless you are a sticky-fingered corrupt cop. So given that the majority of the population are not sticky-fingered corrupt cops that are benefiting from this theft, people get outraged, and there is political movement on this. So this is another example of that, what we call the not unmitigated good news, because let's put this under the category of, now we're back to square one, which, I mean, it's a good thing because we were at square negative 50 before, now we're at square one. You shouldn't need a law to say that cops can't steal your stuff unless you're actually convicted of something. Even then, I think there should be more procedure. But still, I mean, at least it's happened. And it's happened, as you say, in New Mexico and Nebraska, and these are templates that people can follow. So if you're in a state other than Nebraska or New Mexico and you are concerned about this theft that's going on, here's a template that you can follow. Here's a path. So there is some momentum behind this, and hopefully it's just the first of many dominoes to fall before we restore the idea that cops can't just go around stealing your stuff without any reason whatsoever.
Well, and I think too, it's a lot of, as it talked about, being based on, oh, we were going to get the big drug cartels. Forgetting, of course, all that we know of how the drug cartels got their drugs and where do they get their weapons. And it's all a nice, big, cushy gig coming and going. So, again, hopefully we can kind of bust through a lot of this as places are, I think, people are speaking out against it. James, our second story this week on New World Next Week. Federal judge allows a former CIA detainees to sue over torture for the first time. A federal judge is letting a civil lawsuit proceed against two CIA contract psychologists who designed and supervised brutal interrogation tactics that critics call torture. The ruling allows two former CIA detainees and the family of another who died in agency custody to try and win damages in federal court for the abuse they suffered at then-secret CIA prisons in the early 2000s. In a ruling from the bench at Federal District Court in Spokane, Washington, Senior Judge Justin L. Quackenbush said he would deny a motion to dismiss the lawsuit against James E. Mitchell and Bruce Jensen. According to the lawsuit and a Senate Intelligence Committee report, the mistreatment, including, of course, waterboarding, sleep deprivation, confinement in small boxes, rectal feeding, and beatings. Quackenbush gave the parties 30 days to submit plans to request documents, gather sworn statements, and collect evidence for the case. So as the lawsuit progresses, it may shed more light on the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques that the Central Intelligence Agency used in an effort to collect intel about al-Qaeda operations and future plots after the, say it with me, September 11th, 2001 attacks. James, this again is not unmitigated good news, and it's layer upon layer of the onion in a lot of ways that this is. But another bit of kind of good news in that this is going to go forward.
Yes, and let's make an agreement here now to never, ever again parrot enhanced interrogation techniques. Let's call it what it is, torture. And yes, exactly. So we've seen the way this is rolled out. It was psychologically prepared with 24 and stories like that, with Jack Bauer heroically torturing the bad terrorists to get the information in the nick of the time because of the ticking time bomb. And then there was the enhanced interrogation debate and all of that nonsense. And now you have Trump coming out and saying, oh, I'm going to torture them. Waterboarding isn't enough. So that's the way this is gradually introduced to a public that 15, 20 years ago would have said, that's ridiculous. We'll never do that in America. So that's the way this is done, and this is a chance to at least get a legal foot in the door to pry out some of the documents and maybe get some more of the details. And that, again, it's not enough. It's not the overthrow of the New World Order, but it is a step in the right direction, and there are things that can and do come to light in court cases, and sometimes you get some surprising results, as we might mention at the end of today's episode in an update on the Denny Hastert case. So absolutely, there's something happening here, and hopefully we can get a little bit more information out, if nothing else. I'm not exactly holding my breath waiting for the CIA to really come to justice and be broken into 1,000 pieces like JFK wanted to do, but at least it's a step in the right direction.
Well, and isn't it telling that this is all devised by psychologists? Because just as you were saying, you know, if you would have asked this 10, 15 years ago, Americans would say, no, we don't do this, because we historically know that torture doesn't actually work as a way to get that information to defuse that bomb to save all the little kids before something happens in some BS TV scenario. They do it to send a signal that we will torture and kill you. We do not care as an empire. I think it's that sort of, it is a psychological warfare operation to sort of show the enemy of what we're actually capable of. And again, I think all through the Bush years and now through the Obama years, I think has been this kind of systematic destruction of what used to be Republican and what used to be a Democrat. And they all kind of now meet in the squishy New World Order middle, James.
Yeah, and let's not forget who the enemy of the CIA is. It's everyone who doesn't agree with them, anyone who would be a potential roadblock in their agenda, regardless of whether they're someone in the Middle East or whether they're someone in Nebraska or anywhere else. So that's what it amounts to. It's a war on everyone, including you, whoever you are watching this.
And who created Al-Qaeda? Who helped create ISIS? Again, it's this insane sort of circular logic that there's any number of ways you can pick these stories apart, even from the way they sort of officially tell the stories themselves. Our third and final story this week, James, you tweeted, and I've seen lots of stories covering this again, because I think it excites people when they see this kind of story. And even as we were prepping the show notes for this episode, James, one of my pages kind of reloaded, and I saw even a new video talking about this story out of Colorado, where an entire police force quit and the town didn't descend into chaos. Without giving any reason whatsoever, the entire Green Mountain Police Department in Colorado quit. The chief of police announced his resignation two Tuesdays ago, and he was quickly followed by all the other officers. It's now been several days, and the town has not turned into Mad Max. So despite giving no reason, it's likely that the department disagreed with the local politics and reacted by abandoning their duty as public servants, thereby illustrating the irrelevance of their job in the first place. Unfortunately, the people in the town of Green Mountain Falls will likely seek out new group of armed enforcers to ticket people for petty offenses. But in the meantime, it's the perfect example of how societies can function peacefully without the threat of state violence. Now, James, this is not the first time that this has happened. And even recently, we had in December of last year, the entire North South Carolina police force quit after a new mayor was elected. So again, in a lot of these ways, it might come down to sort of local regional issues of why people disagree or agree on things. But again, we enjoy the end result. And we saw in January of 2015, I've got a story about the NYPD's work stoppage backfire. And they actually did a work stoppage the previous fall. But as some of the data started to roll out in early 2015, they were showing that the arrest rates plummeted at no cost to public safety. And actually, it was a more peaceful kind of situation, James. So again, good news.
Yes. And let's be clear about what this news is and what it isn't. I mean, it isn't some sort of anarchist philosophical revolution or anything of that sort. No one seems to know why all of these officials quit at the same time, presumably related, as you say, to internal politics. But anyway, I don't think they've gone public with that yet. So it is not to do with that. But it is an insight. It's a window into the possible, I suppose. And the town is still being serviced by the county sheriff's office, so they're going to take care of any big problems. But it is kind of funny slash sad slash revealing to read some of the stories on this that are reporting about this and quoting some of the people in the town talking about how they're, or not even directly quoting anyone, so this might just be editorializing on the part of the reporters, but saying how citizens are worried that there will be no one to, you know, ticket people who violate bylaws and things like this. You know, oh no, oh, someone might, you know, park on the side of the road where they're not supposed to for 30 seconds when they run into the store. You know, we need a cop there to give him a ticket and raise some funds. So it's interesting to watch this, and it's interesting to watch people's reaction to this and how people who are not philosophically leaning towards libertarianism or anarchism find this, this is just silly. This is a silly little story. And then other people maybe want to read too much into this. I mean, let's take it for what it is. But anyway, as I say, it's an insight into the possible, and it gives us some room for thought about what it would be like if there was no police force, per se, in the way that we understand law enforcement. But even then, I mean, let's, again, not confuse the issue, because anarchism isn't about not having any sort of rules or ways of enforcing it. It's just not having rulers, which is a difference that deserves an entire several hundred podcasts in and of itself. So I think we'll wrap that up here.
As well, I mean, I think even just looking at the word police, you break it down, it's policy. They are there to enforce a policy that's been decided on by people other than you, and it's all, again, about coercion with the use of force. James, I actually just finished streaming a new documentary called Deep Web, and it's about Silk Road and those kind of stories that we've talked about on the web. And it gets to this point where talking about sort of, in a lot of ways, of what we're seeing is the end of the modern drug war in a lot of ways. And they sort of talk for a moment about police officers reaching a point where if they're suddenly being told you're not going to go do this kind of work, it's almost like their last 30 years have been kind of a waste. And that's going to be a huge, again,
or even harmful. Exactly right. And again, I think it's important to note that the importance of a story like this is that people believe that police are what make people moral. And without police, people would suddenly become immoral and start raping and pillaging and killing their neighbors. No, most people don't want to do that. That's the point. Most people actually don't want to do that. So I think we should understand this for what it is.
And of course, and again, not to belabor this too much, we all know that in the most situations, the real violence starts when the cops get there. James, we've got a couple of other kind of good news next week headlines I can throw in here as well. And my latest episode of Good News Next Week, Court Says Cops Can't Look at Your Phone. That's without a warrant, at least. And the LA Times got punked by the Yes Men, and Chicago College has turned a football field into something very useful. A couple of other stories, James, 8 revelations from 2016 that completely vindicate conspiracy theorists. That one written by our friend Claire Burnish. And we learn from a NASA study finding, breaking news, James, get this, newsflash, carbon dioxide helps make the earth green.
Who would have thunk it?
News at 11.
Yeah, exactly.
So those are some of the good news headlines we're looking at, and there is a trove of news that you can always find using hashtag New World next week. So many stories and a lot of things going on, and James, maybe in some ways sneaking in kind of a good news episode before things might get really bad news as we head into May and head into summer of 2016. But you made a note about Hastert, and we saw that story break this morning, if you want to comment on that.
I just want people to look at the story. We'll include a link in the show notes so you can go read it. The judge made a judgment in that they were only trying him for his structured withdrawals, you know, evading money from the cops kind of thing. But the judge was commenting that he is a serial child molester, and saying it was disgusting the way he tried to accuse one of the boys that he raped of extorting him. So the judge made some very clear statements there, but they can only sentence him for that, so it's for a year and a half. Anyway, I'm sure I'll be covering this in the coming days, so stay tuned for that.
All right, so I think that actually wraps up episode 267 of New World Next Week. James, I appreciate it, my friend.
I appreciate it too. Talk to you next week.